Chapter 80. They didn't understand. They didn't seize the moment. Instead, O'Donnell got his head and his feet off the floor and porpoised desperately 6 inches closer to reach her, and Dixon rolled back the other way and a precious foot of free space opened up between them. Reacher stepped gratefully into it and smashed Parker in the gut with the SIG's muzzle. The breath punched out of Parker's lungs and he folded up at the waist and staggered one instinctive step straight into the channel that O'Donnell and Dixon had created. Reacher dodged past him like a bullfighter and planted the sole of his boot flat on Parker's ass and shoved him hard from behind and sent him stumbling on stiff legs straight across the cabin and blindly out the door into the night. Before his scream had died, Reacher had his left arm hooked around Lamazon's throat with the SIG pointing straight at the pilot and the Glock jammed hard into the back of Lamazon's neck. After that, it got easier. The pilot stayed frozen at the controls. The bell hung there in its noisy hover. The rotor beat loud and the whole craft kept on turning slow. The door stayed open, wide and inviting, pinned back by the airflow. Reacher clamped his elbow and hauled backward on Lamazon's neck and pulled him up out of the seat until his shoulder straps went tight. Then he put the Glock on the floor and fished in his pocket for O'Donnell's knuckle duster. He held it between his fingers like a tool and glanced behind him. He extended his arm and pushed Dixon onto her front and used the knuckle duster's wicked spines to rub at the bonds on her wrists. She tensed her arms and the sisal fibers ruptured slowly, one by one. Reacher felt each success quite clearly through the hard, ceramic material. Tiny, dull, harmonic pings, sometimes two at once. Lamazon started to struggle, and Reacher tightened his elbow, which had the advantage of choking Lamazon into submission, but the disadvantage of aiming the SIG behind the pilot instead of straight at him. But the pilot made no attempt to take advantage. He didn't react at all. He just sat there, hands on the stick, feet on the pedals, keeping the bell turning slow. Reacher kept on sawing away blindly. 1 minute. 2. Dixon kept on moving her arms, offering new strands, testing progress. Lamazon struggled harder. He was a big guy, strong and powerful, thick neck, broad shoulders, and he was scared. But Reacher was bigger, and Reacher was stronger, and Reacher was angry. More angry than Lamazon was scared. Reacher tightened his arm. Lamazon struggled on. Reacher debated taking time out to hit him, but he wanted him conscious for later. So he just worried on at the ropes, and suddenly a whole skein of sisal fibers unraveled, and Dixon's wrists came free, and she pushed herself up into a kneeling position. Reacher gave her the knuckle duster and his Glock, and swapped the SIG from his left hand to his right. After that, it got a whole lot easier. Dixon did the smart thing, which was to ignore the knuckle duster and haul herself across the cabin like a mermaid to Lamazon's pockets, where she found a wallet and another SIG and O'Donnell's switchblade. 2 seconds later, her feet were free, and 5 seconds after that, O'Donnell was free. Both of them had been tied up for hours, and they were stiff and cramped, and their hands were shaking pretty badly. But they didn't have difficult tasks ahead of them. There was only the pilot to subdue. O'Donnell grabbed the guy's collar in one fist and jammed a SIG's muzzle up under his chin. There was no chance of him missing with a contact shot, however badly his hands were shaking. No chance at all. The pilot understood that. He stayed passive. Reacher stuck his SIG in Lamazon's ear and leaned the other way toward the pilot and asked, "Height?" The pilot swallowed and said,
3,000 feet.
Let's take it up a little, Reacher said. Let's try 5,000 feet. Chapter 81. The climb took the bell out of its slow rotation, and the open door flapped around for a moment and then slammed itself shut. The cabin went quiet, almost silent by comparison. O'Donnell still had his gun to the pilot's head. Reacher still had Lamazon arched backward in his seat. Lamazon had his hands on Reacher's forearm, falling downward but listlessly. He had gone strangely passive and inert, like he sensed exactly what was threatened, but couldn't believe it was really going to happen. Like Swan couldn't, Reacher thought. Like Orozco couldn't, and Franz couldn't, and Sanchez couldn't. He felt the bell top out and level off, heard the rotor bite stationary air, felt the turbine settle to a fast, urgent whine. The pilot glanced in his direction and nodded. More, Reacher said. Let's do another 280 feet. Let's make it a whole mile. The engine noise changed, and the rotor noise changed, and the craft moved upward again, slowly, precisely. It turned a little, and then came back to a hover. The pilot said,
1 mile.
Reacher asked, What's below us now?
Sand.
Reacher turned to Dixon and said, Open the door. Lamazon found some new energy. He bucked and thrashed in his seat and said, No, please, please, no. Reacher tightened his elbow and asked, Did my friends beg? Lamazon just shook his head. They wouldn't, Reacher said. Too proud. Dixon moved back in the cabin and grabbed Lennox's seat harness in her left hand, held on tight, and groped for the door release with her right. She was smaller than Lennox had been, and for her it was more of a stretch. But she got there. She clicked the release and pushed off hard with spread fingertips and the door swung open. Reacher turned to the pilot and said, Do that spinning thing again. The pilot set up the slow, clockwise rotation, and the door opened up all the way and pinned itself back against its hinge straps. Shattering noise and cold night air poured in. The mountains showed black on the horizon. Beyond them, the glow of Los Angeles was visible, 50 miles away. 1 million bright lights trapped under air as thick as soup. Then that view rotated away and was replaced by desert blackness. Dixon sat down on Parker's folded seat. O'Donnell tightened his hold on the pilot's collar. Reacher twisted Lamazon's neck up and back with his forearm hard against his throat, pulled him upward against the limits of the harness, held him there. Then he reached over and used the SIG's muzzle to hit the harness release. The belts came free. Reacher pulled Lamazon backward all the way over the top of the seat and dumped him on the floor. Lamazon saw his chance, and he took it. He pushed himself up into a sitting position and scrabbled his heels on the carpet, trying to get his feet under him. But Reacher was ready, readier than he had ever been. He kicked Lamazon hard in the side and swung an elbow that caught him on the ear, wrestled him face down on the floor and got a knee between his shoulder blades and jammed the SIG against the top of his spine. Lamazon's head was up, and Reacher knew he was staring out into the void. His feet were drumming on the carpet. He was screaming. Reacher could hear him clearly over the noise. He could feel his chest heaving. Too late, Reacher thought. You reap what you sow. Lamazon flailed weak backhand blows that didn't come close to landing. Then he put his hands flat on the floor and tried to buck Reacher off. No chance, Reacher thought. Not unless you can do a push-up with 250 pounds riding on your back. Some guys could. Reacher had seen it done. But Lamazon couldn't. He was strong, but not strong enough. He strained for a spell and collapsed. Reacher swapped the SIG into his left hand and looped his right over Lamazon's neck from behind like a pincer. Lamazon had a big neck, but Reacher had big hands. He jammed his thumb and the tip of his middle finger into the hollows behind Lamazon's ears and squeezed hard. Lamazon's arteries compressed and his brain starved for oxygen, and he stopped screaming, and his feet stopped drumming. Reacher kept the pressure on for a whole extra minute, and then rolled him over and spun him around and sat him up like a drunk, grabbed his belt and his collar, pushed him across the floor on his ass, feet first. He got him as far as the door sill and held him there, arms pinned behind him. The helicopter turned, slowly. The engines whined and the rotor beat out discreet bass thumps of sound. Reacher felt every one of them in his chest, like heartbeats. Minutes passed, and fresh air blew in and Lamazon came around to find himself sitting upright on the edge with his feet hanging out over the void like a guy on a high wall. A mile above the desert floor, 5,280 feet. Reacher had rehearsed a speech. He had started composing it in the Denny's on Sunset, with Franz's file in his hand. He had perfected it over the following days. It was full of fine phrases about loyalty and retribution, and heartfelt eulogies for his four dead friends. But when it came to it, he didn't say much. No point. Lamazon wouldn't have heard a word. He was crazy with terror, and there was too much noise. A cacophony. In the end, Reacher just leaned forward and put his mouth close to Lamazon's ear and said, "You made a bad mistake. You messed with the wrong people. Now it's time to pay." Then he straightened Lamazon's arms behind his back and pushed. Lamazon slid an inch and then lunged forward to try to jack his ass backward on the sill. Reacher pushed again. Lamazon folded up and his chest met his knees. He was staring straight down into the blackness. 1 mile. A speeding car would take a whole minute to cover it. Reacher pushed. Lamazon let his shoulders go slack. No leverage. Reacher put his heel flat against the small of Lamazon's back, bent his leg, let go of Lamazon's arms, straightened his leg fast and smooth. Lamazon went over the edge and disappeared into the night. There was no scream. Or maybe there was. Maybe it was lost in the rotor noise. O'Donnell nudged the pilot, and the pilot yawed the craft and reversed the rotation, and the door slammed neatly shut. The cabin went quiet. Silent, by comparison. Dixon hugged Reacher hard. O'Donnell said, "Well, you certainly left it until the last minute, didn't you?" Reacher said, "I was trying to decide whether to let them throw you out before I saved Carla. Tough decision. Took some time." "Where's Nagley?" "Working, I hope. The missiles rolled out of the gate in Colorado 8 hours ago, and we don't know where they're going." Chapter 82. There was nothing the pilot could do to them without killing himself also, so they left him alone in the cockpit, but not before checking the fuel load. It was low, much less than an hour's flying time. There was no cell reception. Reacher told the pilot to lose height and drift south to find a signal. Dixon and O'Donnell latched the rear seat backs upright and sat down. They didn't strap themselves in. Reacher guessed they were done with confinement. He lay on his back on the floor with his arms and legs flung wide like a snow angel. He was tired and dispirited. Lamazon was gone, but no one had come back. O'Donnell asked, "Where would you take 650 Sams?" "The Middle East," Dixon said, "and I'd send them by sea, the electronics through L.A. and the tubes through Seattle."
Reacher raised his head.
"Lamazon said they were going to Kashmir."
"Did you believe him?"
"Yes and no. I think he was choosing to believe a lie to salve his own conscience. Whatever else he was a citizen. He didn't want to know the truth."
"Which is?"
"Terrorism here in the States." "Gotta be. It's obvious. Kashmir is a squabble between governments. Governments have purchasing missions. They don't run around with Samsonite suitcases full of bearer bonds and bank access codes and diamonds."
Dixon asked, "Is that what you found?"
"Highland Park. $65 million worth. Nagley's got it all. You're going to have to convert it for us, Carla."
"If I survive, my plane back to New York might get blown up."
Reacher nodded. If not tomorrow, then the next day. Or the next.